over a year ago.
Oh, so it's recent.
Yes. Then ceremonies in about 3 months. And then I spent the whole time by myself in a wood cabin in Portugal, central Portugal, just integrating and connecting. And I could really say that journey, I saw a part of me die. I was very strong in many ways. So I left Bali, sick, overwhelmed, and not, you know, everything had died, so to speak. And I didn't know if I would ever come back. Like I left open ticket, just completely, and you know, completely shattered, and at the same time completely grounded and open. Like, okay, I don't know where I'm going, but I'm gonna keep going. And I went to Holland, and I took a bicycle, packed some bags, and I went on this pilgrimage to Santiago de Compostela. And I spent about 3 months cycling, where, you know, like a bit like now, we just arrive here on sunset and like, all right, where am I going to sleep? But this time I had a tent, so I would sleep in nature. And this pilgrimage in of itself is very sacred, because many people have walked this path for eons.
From?
It runs all through Europe, but it always runs to Santiago de Compostela, the cathedral in Spain. So the path I did is about 3,000 kilometers.
On a bike?
Yeah, and it's very mountainous, and so some days you can only do 50 k's. And then when I, on that way, I met a brother of mine, Jivan, who's from Venezuela, and he spent most of his time doing medicine work. Well, I spent most of my time doing spiritual work, and we met. And we had a very strong connection, and he invited me for Rapé ceremony, which we had done before. And that's when something really strong revealed itself, a tension between the modern and the indigenous, in a sense, that was alive in both of us. That's the best way I can explain it. And he decided then to say, hey, look, I'm in touch with Huni-Kun tribe, like very pure, you know, from Pajé, from Brazil. They're now coming to Portugal. I have land in Portugal, and I'm going to host them. Because if you ever want to sit with the ayahuasca medicine, this would be your ultimate opportunity, because they are the custodians of the medicine, and I feel like inviting you. And I got the call, and I said, yes, I'm super scared, but I'm going to do it. And it's not that I'm scared of psychedelics, I've done many, worked with many before, but there was just something really scary about it. And from that moment of meeting, the ayahuasca spirit would come to me every night and just start talking to me. And the journey started there and then. You know, it's a very long story, but I knew a part of me had to really die. I left Bali so I could go and die. And that's all I knew. Like, I gave up the restaurants, the school, money, friendships, whatever I had built up here in 10 years, I just left.
This is just last year?
Yeah, I'm just cycling. And it was beautiful, I felt alive. I wasn't scared of anything. I didn't even plan my food at some point. I was just like, all right, we'll see what comes. And it worked out perfectly. Mm. And, you know, long story short, but on that first night of ceremony, I sat in front of the teepee meditating, and that spirit of earth came to me again. And she goes, this is going to be scary, but you're going to be okay. And I never had that message from the earth. I'm like, okay. And I went into the ceremony with 40 people in a teepee with these amazing pajés from Amazon. And we drank the medicine. Nothing happened. Drank the second cup. And basically, I disappeared.
More or less, how much time between cup one and cup two?
Oh, about an hour and a half.
Okay.
Well, people around me were vomiting after 5 minutes. Yeah. And this medicine is nothing to do with how much you drink. It was just, it was preparing me. And I was learning lessons in that hour and a half that I could see. Yeah. But when that very first experience, I had this rebirth. And so I disappeared completely. I didn't know my body, my mind, my thoughts. I became this pure awareness. And I was scared. The awareness was scared. And the question I asked is, why am I still scared? It's like, because a part of me still attaches to my birth family, to a recognition by the world of these things. Mm. And the medicine was like, don't you want to let that go? Mm. And I said, absolutely. I'm like, I'm so done. I'm so tired. I'm going to die if I don't let this go. Mm. And I said, yes. And I exploded, floated into the universe. And then Mother Ayahuasca came. and she put me on her lap like a grandma, and she spent 2 hours teaching me every nook and cranny of the universe. I was just sitting there having aha moments for an hour and a half. And I couldn't believe the blessing that me on this very first night. And then I came back, and the Pagé said, okay, we're done with the traditional prayers, because it was the prayers that took me on this journey. It wasn't about how much medicine I was drinking. It was the moment.
It's the Icaros.
Yeah, the moment he started this particular Icaros, you know, the ones without the guitar, the traditional ones.
Yeah.
That experience happened. Then he said, okay, now we will start the modern music. And the woman who was there started singing Icaros with her guitar, and I sat there raw and open and completely dazzled what just happened. And I look at her, and because we're on the medicine we can see everything, and I could see in her the strength, not just of a woman and of all of the women, and the strength of her as an indigenous and all of the indigenous, the level of forgiveness, the level of humility, the level of everything that she had to have to sit there on a freezing night in Portugal with 40 white people who are desperately looking for their healing. And after everything that's happened, which we all kind of have a sense of, she was still there.
Wow.
And I saw her strength, and I look at her and I start crying, and I cry for 2 hours, nonstop. But the most beautiful cry I've ever shared myself. It was just humility, love, appreciation for the feminine and for indigenous. Mm. Just complete, like, all the hardship I went through was like gone, because I was just there, thank you. And it's so beautiful. Other women got up from the circle, started dancing, and I could see their hardship, their struggle. And that was my welcoming into this world. And in that moment I knew, yes, I'm very new to this in a way, but it's so familiar to me. I love this medicine. I mean, I love this experience. And this is my path, not just to personal healing, but this is my path of finally finding a teacher in nature, because I spent like most of my life connecting to nature here, 10 years in Bali, growing food. Just everything for me, when I'm in nature, I'm happy, like here with you guys today. And then I found a teacher in a culture, in a plant, in a people, but not in one particular person, just in that experience, not even in medicine, I can also do it without, but in that moment I realized, wow, and I just have to listen. And that's what started the experience. And then at some point, the initiation night came, and then that name came. And, you know, so many people sit with indigenous and get names and they might never use them, but for me this was very particular. Lifetimes of work leading up to this sixth night initiation, where I knew for myself, this is, relatively speaking, who I truly am, and that name Inua embodies much more who I am, as much as we identify with something, than the name Simon. But, you know, my mom calls me Simon, I love it. But the people, like I shared with James, like today a friend messaged me and they go, hey Inua, I love that. Because I feel more spiritually connected to those. Well, when I go back in the world, I'm Chef Simon, that's cool too. I don't want to sort of overrule the more human or the more spiritual. I think they can both exist.
And your Instagram name is New Earth Custodian.
Yeah.
What an epic Instagram name.
And the word Inoa in Hawaiian, at the end of a prayer, at the end of a chant, you say, hey, Inoa, no. And you call out to, if it's a prayer for a particular spirit, if it's a prayer for a particular land, you say, hey, Inoa, no. Yeah.
Wow, goosebumps when
you
say that.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of depth there in that word, Inoa. Yeah, in the Hawaiian language. Yeah. Well, I feel like you really touch on something potent and something that I find myself contemplating a lot, which is the experience, like what you shared in ceremony there. You know, I spent 2 years studying with indigenous practitioners, ayahuasqueros, in Ecuador. And the experience that I had, and in what I hear, one of the aspects that I hear in what you're sharing, is the potency for people from Western culture having this entry point in these relationships with those of indigenous heritage. And to be in, like you said, it's not necessarily the medicine. It's not necessarily the place. It's not necessarily the specific particular people that we're with. But there's something deeper, that all of those are rooted in. And we were talking yesterday about what it is to be indigenous, and I feel that what you were touching upon there gets close to what it is to be indigenous and what it is that's so healing for people from the West to experience. And like what you were sharing about the strength of the woman holding the medicine in that ceremony, and that despite all of the atrocities, all of the challenges, all of the overtaking, all of the dynamics that have gone into the play between, you know, what we call Western society and colonialism and indigenous heritage, indigenous roots, despite all of that, there she is holding space for the very people who look like the oppressors, that look like the colonizers, who descend from them, who carry perhaps lineages of this way of being, this like imbalanced way of existing. And of course, in the, you know, divine hilarity of it all, of course, it's those who have nearly been stamped out by that imbalanced colonialism who then come to teach those who are born in and then escaping or disassociating from that Western upbringing.
Yeah. I mean, covered in goosebumps, the irony of it all.
Yeah.
And for me, and this has been way before my medicine journeys, one of the key practices or embodiments I had to go through in order to stay sane and alive and stay inspired to do what I do in the world is this idea of allowing earth grief to move through me.
Earth grief?
Yes, earth grief.
Uh-huh.
And so there's a woman called Joanna Macy, who is a Buddhist nun and an activist, she's 98 by now. And she really brought a lot of awareness to earth grief, the sense of like all humans being children of the earth in this human form. And since the earth is under a lot of distress caused by humans, we have to carry that pain inside of us. If we were to deny that pain, you know, it's like, and so a lot of the time I notice when I feel uncomfortable with something, there's a tendency to suppress it and to go into addictions and distractions. So when she invited me to feel a sense of, is there an earth grief inside of me? It put me in touch with this very deep roaring pain and sadness that I felt today with my brother James here. And I really welcome that. When we spoke about the waterfall, when you shared with me that you know that waterfall is stronger and you know it's declining, I feel that, and this is an absolute, you know, appreciation, I feel a sense of rage in you, which makes me trust you, because I know through that you care. And so instead of, you know, suppressing these things, to allow ourselves to feel the full spectrum of emotion and to go there, how Joanna Macy explained it, it's like the more you can grieve the earth, the more you can actually go into the despair, the rage, the anger, whatever is there, the more you can love them. And that makes sense, because if you, let's say you're my best friend and your brother commits suicide, and you're going through a depressed state. Mm-hmm. And I'm sitting with you, and I'm like, hey, dude, I don't want this part of you right now. I'm in good vibes only. I couldn't truly love you. I couldn't truly know you. But for me to have the ability to sit with you, to sit together, and to just to sit with the full experience and not to bypass that, is allowing me over and over again to find more strength in myself and to find true healing. And so in those ceremonies, a lot of the time, I felt enormous amounts of everything, whether it's shame, guilt, rage, despair, about my own, how I've lost touch with these essentials. And it was also through the really dark journeys where the ancestors would come of these Huni Queen and would take me into the underworld and show me their pain. And you know, the medicine doesn't show you with pictures, just you get the full experience. And so one night I was strapped to the floor on my back and I couldn't move and my mouth was ripped open. And I decided to allow that experience to play out. I'm like, all right, what's going on in here? And what I was experiencing was actually an experience where I was an indigenous tribes member in the forest, and some Western kind of doctor had come and it was studying me. And what I could feel in detail, this was very potent, is the level of, it's so difficult to speak, to be seen like some primitive animal. Even though animals aren't even primitive, because that's what the medicine is teaching us. I mean, I don't even say that animals are primitive, but they viewed it as some, you know, some primitive animal.
Barbaric.
And to know that actually this particular culture has access or knowledge of the cosmos, of the universe, that even the most advanced scientists in the West don't have. It was that level of unfairness. And these ancestors, they were with me, and they invited me into the underworld to feel that. And instead of bypassing that and being like, oh, this is going to be a bad trip, I don't want to see it, this was on night four, I decided, no, I want to feel it all. And it was very uncomfortable, but it developed a level of humility and respect in me.
Yeah.
Just that experience of mouth being ripped open and the rattles were stolen, and you know, there were so many experiences that at least it allowed me to understand a little bit. But still, I feel for us, coming from a Western background, there's also great healing, and also here in Bali even, just sometimes to sit with the elders and to see how silent we can be. Because I notice in myself, my mind is very quick to judge, to simplify things, to, oh, no, that can't be, to rationalize things. And in those moments, I'm still not able to really hear the wisdom. There's a grandmother in our cooking school, and sometimes for a year or something, I haven't heard her. And then one day, I'm fasting, my nervous system is calm, I sit with her, and she'll say something, and all of a sudden, I get it. The whole time, I wasn't hearing you. How frustrating must that be? You know? I think there's great healing in us. Finding better ways to listen, even as an entire Western society. I mean, look at Australia, and are very long discussions.
I hear in that is the difference between hearing and listening. You know, hearing is, I would say, to abbreviate it, hearing is passive. You know, I'm hearing the river, I'm hearing the bugs, I'm hearing your voice. Listening is active. It's an intentional meeting you there, you know? I can hear the river or I can listen to the river. I can hear a song or I can listen to the song. I can hear wisdom or I can listen to wisdom.
There's something beyond I want to add to this.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I want to use Australia as an example. The Europeans, you know, colonized the land we now call Australia, and created a society on top of an existing society. And the way I see those beautiful manicure parks with clean toilets is, for me, it just signifies that we've just paved over a culture. And what I've always felt, I spent 7 years in Australia as an earth intuitive, I felt this deep rage and sadness under the surface. I mean, I've been lying on the earth there crying, feeling it.
Mm-hmm.
And what I feel Australia has done so far is to say, okay, now we recognize indigenous culture, and hey, you can come to our university and we'll build you a house. And I'm not saying that all of this is negative. What I'm still feeling is like, are we able as a society to also create an equal space for this indigenous culture to heal and to express itself truly in the way it wants to? And maybe the current indigenous people alive today are starting to forget even what that means. Can we? I feel for us in a Western conditioned background to get to that level of understanding, we need to do the medicine work and the healing first. Because our minds will just still be too rigid to still go, well, a concrete house is better than a shack. But like, you know, this is the shadow of aid work, where these doctors go to Africa to fix people. And I do feel very passionate about this. Like, how much can we truly, truly listen, but also truly quiet our own mind that still secretly thinks it knows better?
Yeah.
That's deep.
And what if in that listening they said, well, we don't want you here, and that's what we've been saying the whole time?
Yeah.
You know, what does that do for a person when they actually really listen to that? It's one thing to hear somebody say, you paved over our land, enough is enough, we would like our land back in totality. It's another thing to actually listen to that, right? And heed that. And very similar to what you were expressing about suppressing the feeling of, you know, the earth grief, and suppressing with the pattern tends to be to like suppress or deny or avoid, you know, and go to addictions and different things to deny a feeling that is uncomfortable or confronting. In the same way, I think culturally, because society is just made up of a bunch of humans, and all of the humans have these typical patterns that they operate by, society as a whole suppresses and pushes down these uncomfortable conversations, these glaring realities, you know, which is, hey, in Hawaii, for example, there was no treaty. Illegal occupation to this day. And it's very justifiable for people to want their land back. You know, hey, what are you doing here? You know, bug off. And to really listen to that requires an immense upheaval for those who have found comfort in those places, in that way of life, in those paved, manicured parks. Yeah. And to approach that transition is huge. And perhaps, I don't agree with this, but it is far simpler, far easier to just keep status quo. To just keep, well, you know, I know these people are mad. I don't agree with this perspective, but, you know, yeah, these people are mad. Yeah, okay, they want their thing, but yeah, we got a good thing going on here. What if we just build them some houses? Right? What if we just inject a little bit of comfort into them? Maybe they'll quiet down. You know, and that's kind of been the way that things have gone.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, now as a human society as a whole, both indigenous and modern, of course, we're not looking to go back. I believe we're looking to go. I caught a snippet of your podcast yesterday. We're looking to go forward and create a new society for ourselves. And likely what needs to happen is healing on the whole spectrum, indigenous healing, modern healing. And so, to speak of my own wounds, and again, shared with James so beautifully today, what's the deep yearning inside of us? For me, and you shared some of that as well, the deep yearning is this yearning for the family we never had, and the balance we never had. And so then we go back to 5th century Europe. 5th century Europe was colonized, and it took another 1,000 years before those people, let's say, to simplify things, were put on boats to colonize others. What happened in those 1,000 years of destroying the family unit? What about the grief inside of us? Mm-hmm. I was sharing today with James, like building community here. I still have all of these fears inside of me of true, you know, of trust, of true human connection. And so when I arrived in Indonesia 10 years ago, deep inside of me, always looking for family, because I grew up in a fairly broken family, I found myself really attaching myself to those Balinese communities. Because now they didn't have the fancy houses or this or that, but they had this feeling that I never had. And of course, as much as I try to be a part of it by being the good guy and helping them, and that's the wounded healer, right? I kept being rejected. Like, you need your own family. And so I kept becoming face to face with that big wound inside of me that's longing for a family. And I even found that when I sat with Huni Queen. It's like, oh, you know, even though whatever it is that's going on for you, you still have something that we don't have. And I actively engaged with ancestors in those medicine journeys, just voicing like, well, part of me wants to be a part of this. And they kept pushing me away, in a sense. And that's good, because we now, if we come from these broken lineages, I believe we came here to heal those lineages, to find a sense of completion in our own, first and foremost, maybe with our own people, or maybe with all of those. And our own people is not necessarily Caucasian people. My people here in Bali are from all countries all over the world, but maybe from those who decided to kind of leave their lineage behind to an extent and come together here as a rainbow tribe.
Yeah.
Maybe once we really establish that safety inside of us, that mother, father, and inner child are all happy, we could become in a position that we could actually help, let's say, an indigenous person. Because we're not secretly longing for any validation or any approval from them. We're dealing with our guilt, but we're just pure now. And we're here to serve. And this is what's going on in my mind. Like, because what did it take for those colonizers? They must have been so broken when those British people arrived on the land we now call Australia those years ago. And to be able to carry out those acts of violence in the way that they did, there must have been some very broken people.
Yeah.
And so part of our work can be to attend to that inner healing ourselves. And then maybe naturally we can be in service to another. But what I see, many of us still look for indigenous, perhaps to find our own tribe. And I don't know if that is the right path. Right. But at least we, through that path, we would have a lot of appreciation for them. We learn, we listen. I'm sure that's a good thing.
Yeah.
But to continuously keep that in check,
yeah,
in myself is my practice. Anyway.
What if, like, you talk about the inner work and healing, what, like, part of that is coming closer towards, like, land, community, indigenous, and as we come closer to that, that is what unearths those memories in us. And that is the healing.
Yeah.
Meaning, like, if you know, you sort of stay more in Western society, is that healing really going to happen? Because you seem like a guy that's interested in, like, earth and land and community and becoming indigenous. So it seems like as you got closer to that, that's where the healing, that sort of was a catalyst for those deep colonial, indigenous, land, earth, you know, wounds.
Yeah. And I think that speaks to add to that, I think it really speaks to the ways in which it's not necessarily the culture itself, but what the culture is connecting to, that is really behind, like you say, family. You know, it's not about being in a Balinese family. It's not about, you know, joining this village in South America, but it's what they have within that. And that is actually approachable to all people. It's, but when we you know, find that distinction between, okay, I'm going to become Balinese, no, but hey, I see what they're tapping into and what they're touching upon, nature, getting close to the earth, what we were talking about being indigenous. And that, as a cultural orphan, as I say, as somebody, you know, separated from the culture I arose from, those are places where I can go to find connection, to find that intrinsic way of life, you know? And that's what these cultures that we're so amazed by and so moved by and so inspired by are tapping into, I find. I love James, what you were just asking there about, you know, really coming closer to that in your own living reality.
Thank you both. Amazing. When you say I'm interested in Earth, I feel it's more this way of living is the only thing that makes sense to me. And that has been with me my whole life. I left Holland when I was 18. I just couldn't be in such a rational country where I couldn't even, you know. I went down to the little stream and I felt it needed a little waterfall, and I was mucking around in the stream, and I was 14 with a shovel, and the cops came and they wanted to arrest me. And that's when I realized this is not my place. You know, and that's why in Australia I felt at home. At least this land was vast and wild, and to an extent, of course. And so I do think it's all inside of us. And every human being has that indigenous inside of them. You know, maybe we need a different word, because maybe it's not nice for certain indigenous people to hear us calling ourselves indigenous. I'm happy with any word, but I don't ever want to deny our innate earth connection. And that once upon a time, we all lived like that.
Yeah.
And I don't want to idealize how we ever all lived, because there were probably always problems, but I do feel like this. Earth connection is now part of our evolution if we are to survive here. And within that, we're honoring our existing indigenous tribes as our brothers and sisters and as our teachers is an important element in that. Yeah. But every time I do go out, let's say there, the medicine sends me back, like in Holland. 6 weeks after medicine work, spent time with my mom, I tried to leave so hard, but a COVID test kept, you know, at the time you needed that to fly, kept testing positive. Like the universe was having me stay in the house with her, doing some really deep work. Couldn't fully accept my mother in those days. And had to go through some very dark portals. And nowadays, I can call my mom and I just love listening to her. So all of that rage and resentment, that probably from the whole lineage, seems to have transformed. And that's ultimately, I feel, the healing that does need to happen. Instead of running away from, at least this is my journey, running away from the Western world, well, maybe we are now needed, wherever we are needed, to bring what we've learned from, let's say, an indigenous person or from our time in nature and bring that back there.
Yeah.
Because, of course, nature is not separate from us. And, you know, it's to be found in the moment we tune into our heart, into our breath. Even if we sit in a sterile laboratory, we can find nature in the most minute things, because we are a part of that.
Absolutely. And millions and millions and millions and millions and millions of people, especially post-COVID or through COVID, have been forced essentially to recognize the vital importance of nature. And, you know, people stuck in their apartments 30 floors up for a year went a little bit mad. You're going to in those circumstances. And I see this almost like this exodus from the cities. People who are recognizing, okay, there's something missing. And knowingly or unknowingly, they find places to connect. Because we, just like you said, I love the word innate, because it has the root nate, nature, not innate, in nature. Yeah, and it is innate in us. It's part of our, what's the word? Intuition. It's part of our intuition to move in the direction of healing, even if it looks like we're moving away from that.
Yeah.
It is a movement that we can't even really help, you know, but we can certainly foster it and grow it and develop it consciously and really move into that in an intentional way, and breathe a lot of life into it. And I find right now that not only in, say, the United States or Europe or Australia, but all of the people who are also moving around the earth trying to find something new. In all of these places, Bali is an immense portal for this. People come to places recognizing that there's something missing in themselves, and they're drawn by something to these places, to these powerful energetic places. And there are beautiful ways, and I feel like we all have our standings in this, to foster connection when people have taken a step out of the typical way of life. I wonder how possible it is to be entrenched in a city that somebody was born and raised in Europe. How possible is it within that context, within that energetic field, to really step out and experience something new? Mm-hmm. Does it require, I'm asking genuinely, does it require a physical distancing from that way of life? Or can it be found within that city, let's say, or within close proximity to that city? Because there's trees everywhere, you know.
The way I see it, and this ties in with, I have this inability to tell people what to do, in my case, how to eat.
Right.
So I've always come back to, okay, so how are people ever going to change their diet, for example, if I don't tell them how to eat? And what I always come back to is a deep knowing and understanding that I have in myself, that evolution is happening no matter what right now, through humans every day. And I don't feel we have to be concerned with how evolution is going to play out. But like at increasing rates now, life is becoming unbearable for people, showing them, you know, you need to change, either through sickness or stress or whatever it is. And so let's say if someone is in a city, if they're awakening to a point where that becomes unbearable, they're naturally going to make changes, right? And so I feel more for us who have already a certain level of awareness is to provide, if we're inspired to do so, to provide those tools. Yeah. Like let's say we would organize a man circle here. We do that with 10 men. And 8 of those men leave to go back to their country, and they feel so inspired, they'll start their own mats.
Exactly.
And that's how it's going to ripple. Like, we have the school in Bali, and I've often felt like, oh, I'm not making any impact. But we've had hundreds of people passing through, which is not much, an 8 billion population. But all of those people, seeds are being planted in their hearts. And that's the example of nature again. The seed planting is so big. And then they go out, and they'll plant more seeds. And this is perfectly how a forest regenerates, right?
Yep.
And so right now, maybe that's a good analogy there, that we are in the seed planting stage of humanity. Mm-hmm. And don't feel we have to micromanage how these seeds are going to sprout. And I could see those cities either transform from the inside or crumble altogether, you know?
Mm-hmm.
At least that's my view on that.
Absolutely. And what I hear in that is oftentimes it is a beautiful movement to step out of those environments temporarily to be able to really enter a different energetic field. And I agree that the vast majority of people will go right back to that place. However, not necessarily back to that energetic field.
Yeah.
You know, there's a strand that connects to a deeper root that they've experienced, and then they're able to share that and inoculate that place just like the mycelium, you know? And I find this to be a really potent aspect of my time in Bali and the offerings that I want to share, because there's already people coming looking for something. You know, and how can we facilitate that? How can we share and open a space for us all to do that collectively? Not as like, I'm going to tell you, or you're going to tell me, but let's dive in together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we're all doing this, including nature right now. The trees grow at night. They're budding new leaves as we speak. What a gift to participate in that.
And I guess often maybe we underestimate let me give you an example. We started a plant-based restaurant here in Bali 5 years ago. And in the first year, I was expressing myself with only local ingredients, all my perfect dishes. And I was just, that first year, I loved the restaurant food the most. I was so passionate. And I knew I had an insight then, like, now we're on the, in the, we're creating a new forest, and soon I'll be on the edge and I'll have to let go. So over the years, this restaurant is mainstreamed. And of course, the rebel in me doesn't like that. But it's not about me. It's always that restaurant has a certain spirit, and I had to learn to trust it and allow it and show up for it and be in service to it. And so when pandemic came, most restaurants were going bankrupt. And we had a choice. Well, we had no choice. We had to change. And started putting things like burgers and sushi on the menu. Broke my heart. But some greater intelligence, you know, in Uluwatu came. I was meditating. Just showing, oh, this is what you got to do. And I was judging myself and judging it, the process. Like, oh, this is not pure anymore. This is lacking. But looking back, this restaurant is not perfectly what it needs to be. And it's great. And it's that stepping stone for people who've never eaten anything particularly plant-based, you know, designated plant-based. And they get this introduction that they're really enjoying, and it inspires them. But I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, what I find when I create places or co-create, it's always a co-creation with others. I often just want to add my own flavor a little bit too much. I want this to be the perfect place for me. But to also have that insight, like, it can start like that. But then it has to become what it wants to be, and we just got to step out of the way and love it for how it is, even if it's not so pure. And the same is happening with the school. And like, my ego had to really get out of the way there and be like, no, hold on, and trying to control it. Because if something wants to grow, that's probably there. And so it reminds me of what you're saying, like those people from the city, you know, to have that first taste. Mm-hmm. And to go back in my journey, you know, 15 years or something, for me, it was also like that. I wasn't ready, you know, for this full-blown transformational breathwork healing or something I was doing. I was doing Reiki. Right. And that was like the most amazing thing at the time. It's like, you know, and you know, Reiki is great, but it was like very sort of subtle. And so we all deserve our journey, right? In that.
Yeah. And what's medicine for me, what heals me, is effectively healing. Yeah. Whatever the medicine is that really moves the energy in me, I can trust that that is medicinal. And the subtlety that you speak of is super important, where, yeah, it's medicine, but maybe once it's in the hands of somebody else, there's something very vital for them to add to that or to take away from it and to make it their own. Yeah. And this is, I think, a really important thing, right? Because take Reiki, for example. There's a very certain, like, Usui Ryoho Reiki, which is what I studied. There are many teachers who are extremely regimented with it. This is what it is, and this is how it happens. And that's beautiful. One of my teachers is that way. And then to take that template, in the same way that we can take the template of, okay, these are the things that have brought about deep healing in me, let me share that from my own direct experience. In the same way as the template that is Reiki, that can be shared and then augmented for each individual, because we're all going to have different, you know, idiosyncrasies, different flavors to what really draws that healing through and really births something new in our hearts. And I find that to be a really important thing in terms of sharing and creating offerings or holding spaces or schools, is to recognize exactly what you said. Yeah, it's going to take on a life of its own. The medicine will continue to evolve. And to not be so regimented, to not be so structured that it doesn't allow for that organic happening. Because the medicine takes a life of its own. It starts here, okay, yeah, let me share this, and then watch how it unfolds and evolves and takes its own shape. It has its own, a life of its own. And that's nature.